Let Southern Connecticut hear what you think. Call 203-333-9422. The Lisa Wexler Show is back on WICC 600.
I don't know why I was persuaded that this next guest is a doctor. He's not. He's a highly accomplished lawyer. So, okay, his mother didn't get a doctor. She got a lawyer. But our next guest, Daniel P. Shapiro, wrote a book called The Thin Ledge, A Husband's Memoir of Love, Trauma, and Unexpected Circumstances. Dan Shapiro is a very beautiful writer, and he joins us now to talk about this book and a little bit about the story of his life. Dan, hello. Welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Good morning.
Good morning, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
You know, I didn't finish all of the book, but I did get to read a part of it, and I don't know why I thought you were a doctor today, Dan Shapiro.
I got a promotion.
You did, for sure. In the Jewish neighborhoods in which we lived, it was that order of prestige, right? The doctors always came first. Absolutely. So, Dan Shapiro. So you wrote this book, The Thin Ledge, and you wrote about your beloved wife, Susan, and how she changed. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what happened to her, what she was afflicted with? Maybe that's why I thought you were a doctor. There's a lot of sickness, you know, there's a lot of medical talk in this. But anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So we met when we were in college and dated and had three kids. And then when Susan and I both turned 40, she had the first of two brain hemorrhages as the result of a condition she had, which is a cavernous angioma. No need to spend time on that, really, or even understand it. But it caused traumatic brain injury, bleeding in her brain. And the result of that, which was what I write about, is a complete change in the human being that I had known for all of those years and was married to. And ultimately, her personality, in addition to her ability to walk, to use her hands, her vision was impaired. And her personality, the frontal lobe of her brain, was also severely impacted, and that was actually the most challenging part, because I think deal more easily with the physical impairments if the person is there. But when the person isn't there anymore, and progressively so over a period of about 20 years, it's much more challenging. It's just harder, and that at least that's what I found. And so I wrote about the experience of losing her, sort of abruptly in a way, but really in slow motion over time as well, and how I could navigate that as a caretaker for her, as a father for our three kids, and as somebody who just had to maintain a life as well in the midst of all of that sort of difficulty.
We're talking with author Dan Shapiro. The book is called The Thin Ledge. So you wouldn't know this, Dan, and my audience doesn't know this, but my sister-in-law has this condition.
Oh, my God.
And yeah. And my husband's sister had her first episode when she was about 20, which was then called an aneurysm. They really didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in a room at Mass Gen Hospital in complete darkness for a period of months. And they thought she was going to die, but she came out of it. She's now in her 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And then she had her second episode at 26. And then it was a long time. But then she suffered in her 50s a rather severe stroke kind of an event from this. And then she's in Arizona and she had surgery. At the FAME Neurological Institute there. There's a very famous neurological institute in Phoenix, and there's one apparently brilliant doctor.
Barrow, I think it's called.
That's it.
The Barrow.
That's where it is, the Barrow Institute.
There, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And
we,
so she had her surgery
Susan
there.
Was diagnosed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who is the
If you tell me his name, I'll tell you. I can't remember. I met him. I went to Arizona to be with my
Bob Spetzler, maybe.
That's it. He did the surgery on Debbie. Yeah.
He's the best of the best. I don't know if he's still practicing, but he was the guy that we consulted as well.
I'm thinking it's 4 or 5 years ago now. And so I don't know if he's still practicing. But anyway, he's the guy that did it. I met him. I flew to be with Debbie so that the family could show her support. And because she lives in Arizona. Coincidentally, that's where he was. And this is what he told Debbie. He told Debbie that he could not reverse the damage that had been done, but he was hoping that it would stop the bleeding, like quite literally cauterize and stop the bleeding so that she would not further deteriorate. But at a very young age, and she's divorced, but she has two daughters, and one just became a nurse in order through this experience to work at Barrow. Her daughter's an unbelievable human being, Erica, my niece. But she lives in an assisted living facility, Dan, and she requires an awful lot of assistance and help. And it's very troubling to me that the assisted living facility doesn't really understand her condition. They blame her for a lot of things that are not her fault. I wish they had the insight and understanding that you do into the fact that she is suffering from a neurological problem that affects her personality. And they seem to be angry with her, and they personalize things in a way that they should not.
Well, I'd love to talk to them and maybe give them a bit more empathy for her. What you're getting into is so complicated. It's complicated to live with because I didn't think we were going to go quite here, but the problem is that brain injury is particularly diabolical, I think, because you see a person in front of you and you can't see the injury. And the injury is subtle, and it affects behavior and mood and emotion and all the things that make up a person. And you don't see, I mean, with Susan, I saw a lot because she had all these physical impairments. But, you know, it's particularly tough, I think, on children because they're dependent on the adult, in this case, the mom in the family. And they see somebody who's sitting at a dining table struggling, to be sure, with the physical impairments. But the personality difficulties are just very difficult to keep in mind as you're interacting with that other human being. And so these people who are attending the person you're describing are not being sensitive to the fact that she has damage. And
that's right.
You know, in a way that's very that's profound in some ways. It really changes the human being. But because you can't see it, you forget about it, or it's not front of mind when you're interacting with that person, it's unfair. It's unfair to everybody. The whole thing is terribly unfair. So, I'm sorry to hear
that. It's something she struggled with basically her whole life from the age of 19. Yeah. But she had quite a few good years in between before the disease, because she didn't know. Again, they thought it was an aneurysm, an isolated kind of clot. She didn't have the actual diagnosis until she had this kind of stroke event, and then they figured out exactly what it was. They didn't really know a long time ago.
And really for a long time, they weren't really able to diagnose this stuff. I mean, they just didn't have the imaging equipment that they have now. And so one of the things that I write in the book is that, you know, long ago, they would – a cavernous angioma would show up on an X-ray as a brain tumor, and they'd say you have a brain tumor and send you home. And in Susan's case, it was inoperable. There was just a part of her brain that they couldn't access without doing an unacceptable amount of damage. And so they, you know, years ago, they would have sent her home and said, sorry, there's nothing we can do for you. And then that person would live for a long time, and it would confound everybody because it wasn't a brain tumor. It was this cavernous angioma.
So tell us a little bit. We're chatting with Dan Shapiro. The book is called The Thin Ledge. The book itself is written quite honestly. You're very honest about your own shortcomings as a human being and your own frustrations. And it's written very beautifully. What happened to Susan? What happened to her? How long did she live with this? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Susan, unfortunately, passed away a year ago, almost exactly a year ago. We separated several years before that, and she was ultimately not able to, even with care in her apartment, she wasn't able to take care of herself, and she really couldn't be cared for effectively. So she wound up the last couple of years in an assisted living facility, which, as they go, honestly, I made sure was very nice. I mean, it wasn't you know, you sort of get a picture in your head of these houses of horrors, and it was not that.
Oh, no.
But,
No. A lot of them are very nice. Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that is where this ultimately led. The first 15, 16 years of this, so from 40 to 55, 56, she was in the house, and so was I, and we, you know, I was raising the kids and taking care of her with a lot of help that I brought in, and that was our life for 15 years or so, and then things became just sort of too difficult to manage for me. And you're right, I am very honest. I tried to be very honest about the moral choices that. That I was making and that sort of confronted me. And it was not easy. I mean, it was very emotionally challenging, I would say, is one way to put it. But what I try to do in the book is to provide enough detail, you know, about the emotional journey and the difficult choices that are made and the staying or leaving and, you know, how you manage your life. All these things are human, and I did the best that I could. And I think it's important to be honest about all of that so that other people who are having this experience have a reference point and understand that, at least in my view, it's okay to be a human being and to confront these really difficult times and difficult choices. And I found that, oddly, because I'm not a religious person, but I found that for me, there were some really valuable answers in religion. I'm Jewish, and I've never been particularly observant, but I spoke to a rabbi who is a friend, and it was a very important conversation for me, and that provided me a lot of guidance with how to navigate all that.
What did the rabbi tell you, Daniel? What did the rabbi tell you?
Yeah, ultimately, the rabbi said that there is nothing in the Talmud or in Judaism that speaks to this directly, but that the underpinning of the religion is it's summarized basically by the idea that you always choose for life. And the choice that was on the table really was whether the question is, when somebody is that desperately sick, how many lives will that take and spoil? And Judaism tells you that you choose for life instead of choosing to join somebody who is failing. And that's a very complicated, you know, it's a simple set of words, but the concepts are really hard and really hard to implement. But I think having an institutional reference point. Here's the problem. If you speak to friends, you speak to relatives, people are just too much inclined to be sympathetic and kind which they are, and to sort of let you off the hook. And so I never really quite trusted whatever anybody was saying to me about how they would deal with it or what they would do or what I should do, because I always thought that it was a little too forgiving, a little too much latitude, just out of sympathy. And that's what I was hearing. But if you go to a religion and you say, well, this isn't latitude or, sort of a liberal treatment of the situation to benefit me because people are being sympathetic toward me, or their heart goes out to me, and so they're going to be more generous in what they allow me to do when judged in a moral context. With religion, you are not the issue. You are not the subject of the teaching. There just is this institutional, very old, time-tested set of ideas that wouldn't spare you, wouldn't be particularly kind to you if they came out that way. So the moral code that's sort of you can derive from religious teaching, I think, is more reliable in a sense. It's more honest.
I hear what you're saying. We're talking to Daniel Shapiro. The book is called The Thin Ledge. What I'm hearing is that, and I understand this, is that in some fundamental way you needed permission from an authority to be able to do something that you wanted to do, but you felt really guilty about doing. And it's such a complicated thing.
Yeah, absolutely right. You're spot on. That's exactly right. And yeah. I still feel guilty about it. And I do the best I can for everybody involved, including for me.
Yeah.
But, it's all very
that.
Imperfect.
It is imperfect because you've been dealt a terrible situation. And look, frontal lobe dementia can hit people in their 40s and 50s. I have cases as a probate judge that are unutterably heartbreaking. Alzheimer's disease hits millions of Americans, and that can start as early as whenever, but very frequently can start in your 70s, which is extremely young, given the fact that many people in our community anticipate living well into their 90s, if not beyond. And so there are a lot of partners. There are so many partners of people that have had to make and will have to make this kind of choice, that this book is valuable as a reading of your journey and as an exercise in thinking, well, there but for the grace of God, and what would I do, and how you manage this. What happened to you is not unique. People have partners that get ALS, but ALS is usually a discrete period of time and it's over. It's horrible, but that's the truth. But there are people with partners and they love them forever. And there are some people who say for better or for worse is exactly what it means. And it means till the end of time. And no matter what sacrifice I have to make to my life, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to tee it up and do it. And I just think that everybody is entitled, as long as they've thought this through properly and with the right moral motives and kindness, everyone's entitled to have that journey, And for you to be able to have permission to be able to move on to your life, it didn't mean you weren't going to care for your wife and make sure that she wasn't financially and physically well situated, but she had long since to be able to be a partner to you. And you're alive, too. And I understand that, Daniel.
Well, you're getting it exactly right. And my hope is that what I wrote may be a way to give some comfort to people who are struggling with exactly the issues you just described. And by describing the ordeal that my family went through and the choices that we made, maybe it's a useful reference point. Maybe even you read what I wrote and you conclude he got it all wrong. He didn't do it right. Or maybe you read it and you think, well, he just did the best he could, and that's pretty good. It doesn't matter how you come out, really. It's more what the internal dialogue is that one has to have, and does knowing somebody else's human experience help?
Daniel Shapiro. Actually, I want to say Daniel P. Shapiro, because I don't know if you know this, Daniel, but there are many Daniel Shapiros. Daniel P. Shapiro. The book is called The Thin Ledge. It's actually a very beautiful book. A husband's memoir of love, trauma, and unexpected circumstances, published by River Grove Books. It's a beautiful book. You can get it anywhere and everywhere. And I thank you for coming on the show with us today.
Lisa, thank you so much for your time.
I wish you happiness and good health for yourself and for your kids and your family.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show.